Skylar Maxey Wirt has lived a life of highs and ovations. From the moment he left home at the age of 13 to study at the American Ballet Theater School in New York City, to moving to Dresden, Germany to dance with the Semperoper Ballet 4 years later, he has lived a big life on some of the world's most preeminent stages. That bigness continued this year when he received a triple standing ovation and a golden ticket to Hollywood from the American Idol judges with his version of Donny Hathaway's For All We Know. Through it all, he remains thoughtful about the successes of his life and the complexities we face in the world today. As Skylar says, the most important thing that he has learned from all that he has experienced as a person and as a creative artist is to know his worth. Hello and welcome to At The Podium with me, Patrick Huey. At The Podium is a multimedia platform that brings together people from a diverse background of lives, careers, and experiences who all share one thing in common. They have stepped fully into the transformative power of finding and raising their voices to make an impact on the world we live in today. At The Podium holds a space for everyone to share their stories, to be heard, and to bring us inspiration. Today, I'm thrilled to share The Podium with Skylar Maxey Wirt. Skylar Maxey Wirt was born in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. He received his early dance training from the Lancaster School of Ballet under Caroline Trythall and Victor Yelihoin. At age 13, he moved to New York City to join the Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis School of American Ballet Theater. He then joined the Semperoper Ballet in Dresden, Germany at age 18, where he is still currently dancing. He has appeared in numerous productions, including The Sleeping Beauty as Bluebird, The Nutcracker as the Prince, Theme and Variations by George Balanchine, and Peer Gynt by Johan Inger. He has also designed roles in the new creations of Cow by Alexander Ekman and Songs for Siren by Joseph Hernandez. Appearing on the 20th season of American Idol, he has also branched out of the dance world to explore the realm of music. Before we hear from Skylar today, I want to invite you to share At The Podium with the people in your lives. If you find our conversation today helpful, and I hope that you will, take a screenshot and share on your Instagram and tag @thepodium_PatrickHuey. Or if you're on Facebook or LinkedIn, share our links there. Your shares, likes, and 5-star written reviews help grow our audience and move us up the charts. I am grateful for your support in this capacity. Okay, Skylar, welcome to At The Podium.
Thanks for having me again.
I should say actually welcome back, because we had you on in the very first season of the show. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have you back because your life over the past year has gone through an unbelievable change. You have become an uncle. You have gotten engaged. Mm-hmm. You released 2 amazing songs on Spotify, which we're going to talk about. You self-produced them. They're called Throne and Honey Dipped Rose. And then you appeared on American Idol and received a triple standing ovation from Lionel Richie, Katy Perry, and Luke Bryan. Could you have even imagined what your life was going to look like a year from that time?
It's kind of crazy how it all kind of happened with American Idol. And it's funny because it's kind of, you know, I think things don't really, you know, nothing really random happens. Things happen for a reason. But in a way, it did feel like it kind of came out of nowhere. How I got onto American Idol in the first place, I was just posting random covers of songs on my Instagram. And Brandon Boyd from the band Incubus, he saw some of my videos and he reached out and he was just kind of like, you know, I think you're really talented and what do you want to do with singing? And then he suggested that I go on American Idol because he was, I think they called it like a guest mentor or something,
oh, yes,
or a coach or something on mm-hmm. the season, previous season. So he kind of set me up with recommendation from him. And I had a little FaceTime chat with the producers, and then bam, I was on the show. So it all kind of happened really fast. Yeah, it was like a whirlwind, but I'm really happy I did it. I think I gained a lot from it.
And, I mean, there was one thing I had to write it down because it was so beautiful what Luke Bryan said, who has 23 number one hits on the country charts, which I had no idea he had that many number one hits. But he said, you're holding these notes and making them tangible moments. Yeah. And you sang, and I was like, you have a lot of courage because you sang Donny Hathaway.
Yeah.
And I was like, when you come up anywhere singing Donny Hathaway, you're really making a statement about who you are as a singer and an artist, because he was probably one of the most gifted singers ever. And I'm not saying that to be dramatic, but what he could convey, what he could convey through his voice and the emotion and the range of his work was just spectacular. And you sang the song so beautifully.
Thank you. Thank you. He's a huge vocal inspiration of mine. His voice is just so beautiful. And I was happy with the response from the judges, because obviously it was a very good response, but I never took singing classes or anything before. But leading up a couple months before my audition, I did start working with a coach. And we really focused a lot on the performance of the song and getting the emotion of the song across. Mm-hmm. And I was happy with the performance I gave, just because I felt like I did that. So I felt kind of accomplished in that. And after he said that, I was kind of like, oh, okay, I did what I came to do. So, you know, like, yeah.
When you were in that moment, you were the last singer of that day, I believe they said, when you
yes.
Did you have any expectation that you were going to get the response that you got and then be moved on to Hollywood Week?
I came in not knowing what the response would be, but I kind of went into it thinking about it as a performance, as opposed to kind of like trying to prove myself, because I think that would have just made me even more nervous. And I was nervous. I was really nervous. It was my first ever kind of professional thing as a singer, you know? So, and it's so, you walk into the room and it's just like lights. And then it's like Katy Perry's like right in the middle with these like piercing blue eyes. And you're just like, oh my God, it's really happening. And they're just like lit. And then they're mic'd. So like their voices from everywhere. It's like a very overwhelming experience. So I was just like, let me just ground myself by thinking of it as a performance and just try to be as honest as I can, because then it's just up to them. I did all I can do. You know what I mean? Yeah, I was very happy to see that they enjoyed the song.
They loved it. They loved it.
Yeah.
And they asked you, I mean, I love what you said. On that day, you said, I've been on such a specific path for so long that I never took the time to invest in myself as a singer. So why now? Why this renaissance of Skylar? Because your life is to be just expanding in huge ways.
That's a very good question. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I have the best answer. It's just kind of, I think that I've always had in myself that I wanted to, that I enjoyed singing. And I always kind of had this idea that like I would want to do something with it, but I never knew how that was actually going to happen. And when this opportunity came with American Idol, I was kind of like, oh, maybe that's my first instinct. When this guy, Brandon, contacted me and everything, I wasn't sure. I was like, oh, should I do this? Like, I'll have to leave Dresden. I have to leave my job that I've worked my whole life basically to get to, you know, and to do this thing that I don't even know what it really is. Or, you know, I'm not in that world ever. So I just decided to not have any expectations and just kind of go for it. And I think that taking that leap kind of proved to myself that like, this is something that I want to do with my life as well as dance. And I'm still kind of figuring out how that looks, being a dancer and finding my voice through music and stuff like that. But that whole, the whole experience with American Idol definitely opened me up to be just being more serious about my singing and about making music.
And did the ballet in Dresden support you going? I mean, clearly you went and you still have your job.
Yeah. Yeah. They completely supported me. Basically, I went in November 1st to Nashville, and that was where I was there from. I was only there for like 4 days, maybe. That's when I recorded the audition that was aired. And then after that, I came back, and then for that, I had a meeting with my director, and I basically told him, you know, this is a situation. I got this really cool opportunity. I don't want to miss it. And he let me leave for Nutcracker. because normally I would go, when I went back to LA, this was in December. So that's like Nutcracker time. And funny enough, this was like in the midst of Corona and everything still. We were performing, but right when December happened, Corona hit again and all the shows were canceled.
Right.
So I was actually in LA and everything in Dresden was shut down. And so I actually didn't really miss like anything. And it just kind of happened that way. It wasn't really planned. I was planning to miss a lot of kind of, you know, a full performance. But yeah, I ended up coming back to Dresden in January and then we continued with Nutcracker into January. So it worked out. But luckily, my director was very understanding. He let me go and kind of like, you know, try it out. So
those people who let us fly are really instrumental in our success, usually.
Absolutely. Because if he would have said no, it would have, I mean, none of it would have happened. And that would have been a shame. And I wouldn't even be making music now, I don't think. So.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I listened to you on Instagram and I, of course, watched the American Idol piece that you were in. And I'm curious who are your musical influences, because when I'm listening to you, I hear the R&B, the modern R&B. I even hear a little bit of the old time Motown sound as well. So who exposed you to that music? And then are those your influences? Are they part of what helps you make your music today?
They definitely are. I would say I draw a lot of inspiration from like old, like soul music and, what people sometimes refer to as like neo soul and like Motown and R&B music. It was the music I grew up around. My mom really liked Motown. And like my favorite artist in the world probably is Erykah Badu. She's like huge inspiration.
You better call Tyrone.
I got that from. Exactly. Tell them, come on. So, my sister listens to Erykah Badu a lot. So like I got that music kind of from her. And I don't know. I love like Donny Hathaway, Luther Vandross, that kind of era, Anita Baker, that time of music. Mm-hmm. I listen to a lot of old music. I like newer artists too. Like Ari Lennox is a huge one that I'm a big fan of now. But I've always just liked older music, even like old like Billie Holiday. I don't know. It's just it always kind of resonated with me, and I always because I wasn't I'm not necessarily like a trained singer, so I would kind of. Also, John Legend was a big inspiration. And when I was younger, I would just kind of sit in my room and try to like sing like him, I guess. And I feel like I kind of learned to sing from these old singers because that's what I listen to. And that's what I would try to like copy.
Right. So, what is it like for you? Because you've spent your entire life expressing through dance, through your body. And here you are now literally expressing through your voice. And I wonder what that gives you as a person and an artist to increase your vocabulary to include singing. What is that giving you as a person and an artist?
What I like about it is that it's really like on my terms, you know, when I'm making a song, it's just like, I get to just like play and kind of do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm as a dancer, especially as in a, you know, a ballet dancer in a ballet company, it's a lot of taking direction and working with a choreographer. You don't necessarily choose what you dance all the time, but you work with what you're given, you know, so to speak. And with being on the other side, like of, you know, creating things, and it's nice to determine what I want to do. Right now, I think it's kind of a luxury that I'm in a situation where I am an artist and I have a stable job and everything, but I get to do music however I want to do it. Right now I'm not reliant on appealing to anybody with my music. I can just do exactly how I want to do it. And I hope that I can hold on to that as long as possible. Because there does come to a certain point where you have to appeal to people for them to like your music if you want to, like, you know, make money off of it. So hopefully I can find the balance between being able to produce exactly what I want and also appealing to other people. So it's a fine balance, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the artistic struggle, right? When you...
Yeah.
Create, you normally start creating what feels good to you. And then when you try to monetize that or increase the scope of what you're doing and reach a broader audience, those questions about, is it relevant? Is it current? Is it timely? Start to really impact the creative process. And you kind of hope that your art can still be your art, even as you try to monetize it and have it reach a larger audience. Or sometimes it's just the art that you're creating for yourself, but I think most people want to create art for art to be viewed and to be a part of the conversation for people, just beyond their peer group.
it's a fine balance to maintain your unique voice and do kind of what you want, but find an audience that is interested.
When we first talked last year, which was right around when all this American Idol stuff was happening, and you were very good about not talking about it.
Yeah.
But you had said something interesting, and I wrote it down because I was re-listening to what we had talked about. And you said that for you to achieve the repertoire that you were doing at Synth Opera, you had to rethink your ideas about classical training, and that you had to change and grow your relationship to what you were taught. And I wonder how that opening up your ideas about all of that maybe helped channel you through the doors of singing.
That's interesting. I think maybe becoming more confident in myself as a dancer and in my place as a dancer allowed me to branch off a little bit. I think before I would have been like so scared to leave even for like a month from my company to do something else because I would have felt like, oh, it means I'm not dedicated enough, or it means I'm going to miss out on something or whatever, whatever. And I guess when the opportunity came with American Idol, I was at the point where I was stable enough in myself to know that I could leave and come back and still pick up right where I left off or not miss out on anything because I'm not scrambling to be seen necessarily anymore. Or I'm not, I'm just more stable within how I see myself as an artist and as a dancer.
And you also said in that first interview that dance was a physical manifestation of something on the inside of you. And I wonder, what does singing manifest for you?
Mm-hmm. I think before American Idol and before I got kind of more serious about singing, I would have said that dancing and singing were like two very, very different like sensations within myself, artistically, whatever. But now I think they're much more similar than different. They're two different mediums, of course. They're kind of like two sides of one coin. I think that I think music is a bit broader. It reaches more people than dance does. Dance is beautiful and I love dance and you love dance. And a lot of people love dance, but a lot of people don't. But I don't really know of anyone who doesn't love music. Music is a bit more universal. Dance is also universal, but I think music even more so. It comes even before dance because you dance to music usually. So I think it's interesting. It's also more... it's a little bit more current, you know, being a ballet dancer, it's kind of a specific art form that not a lot of people know about. And music, especially the music I like, it's more, people can relate to it more. Like I've done pretty well so far in my dance career and everything, and I post about it and stuff. But when I got on American Idol was when people were really from my hometown, you know, writing me and like, oh my God, you've made it. You've done this like amazing thing. And meanwhile, I've been like dancing for all this time and nobody has said anything. And it's fine, but it's what people relate to. It's easier to understand, I think, than ballet.
You're right. Something like American Idol does have that kind of reach that mm-hmm. perhaps ballet doesn't have. But I would imagine Misty Copeland might feel or have a different perspective on that.
Yeah, it's definitely changing. It's definitely changing. There's things happening and there's more combining of worlds now. The current kind of pop world or popular culture world and ballet is definitely intermingling now more than it did in the past. But there's still that separation that music is a bit broader, I would say, for now.
It's interesting you bring that up because the fine arts like ballet, even like opera, I mean, Kathleen Battle did a duet with Alicia Keys that had millions of views on YouTube. And Renee Fleming a few years ago singing the national anthem at the Super Bowl, that it's raised the visibility of these once really sort of rarefied arts. And people are really, particularly your generation, is really finding these arts and really grateful for them and really investing in them and seeing the value in them. Yeah. Perhaps in a way that my generation didn't when we were your age. We all wanted to be on, but that was about it, you know.
Yeah. And I wonder if that has to do with the, you know, social media. It's more, you know, there's so many dancers on Instagram or TikTok or whatever who can post. There's so it's easy access now. Yes. And before, even when I was like younger, you had to know, you know, online which website to go to, or before that you had to go to a library and look up these old tapes or whatever. But now everything is so accessible. You can see an amazing dancer just on your phone. Or, you
know. Mm-hmm. And I think it's smart too, because on the social platforms, the ballet dancers are now mixing in pop music to the choreography they're doing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder for you, Skylar, how the singing is impacting the dance.
Well, the biggest thing I think isn't so much how it's directly affecting my dance, but how having another outlet in general affects my work as a dancer. Or like, because sometimes me personally, I have a tendency to get so focused on work and dance and everything, and I get really like wrapped up. And I think for any artist, it's good to have a different outlet that's also artistic, but outside of your main thing. So when I'm like working on a song and singing whatever, it's like Skylar the singer. And I put Skylar the dancer in the back a little bit just for that time. And for me, I always come back to dance more kind of refreshed. And it's given me a lighter feeling about my work as a dancer, which kind of has opened me up to be a bit more free. And it's allowed me to have a bit more freedom in my idea of myself as a dancer.
You've said that ballet, being a dancer, shapes your body. Mm-hmm. I wonder how dance shapes you as a person.
That's a good question. I think because in order to move forward as a dancer, you have to let go of, like I said before, like things that you've learned or things that you've picked up or ideas that you've had about yourself. And you have to kind of like peel back layers in order to find who you are truthfully as a dancer. And that's probably the same for any art form. But I think particularly with dance, because it's so personal and it's you, it's your body, soul, mind, connection, everything, you know? So I think as a person, it's required me, as a dancer, I've had to really look at myself and understand myself, know my strengths, know my weaknesses, know my worth, and be able to confidently kind of understand that without any doubt at all. And I think that has translated also into me and my personal life, me as a person. But I don't know if I would have come to that so quickly if it had been for dance.
You just talked about knowing your worth, and that struck a chord in me because I think we're sort of in a time where people are trying to figure out the value of life, the value of what it means to be human, what it means to be trans, what it means to be queer, what it means to be straight, what it means to be living in a particular time and place. Can you talk about that journey to understanding your worth and what you as Skylar bring to any process that you're engaged in, whether it's dancing, singing, writing your own music?
It took me a while to just be able to say to somebody that like, yeah, I'm a talented dancer, or to just confidently say that I was talented. Just because I think I talked about this a little bit in our last interview, but just because the environment of a, you know, dance company or dance schooling is so intense. And it's so so much about kind of perfecting yourself that it's easy to get wrapped up in like, oh, not good enough thing or whatever. But realizing that you have everything you need, and yeah, understanding your worth and not, I guess the most important thing I think that I've learned is that when you truly understand your worth, nobody can take it away from you. Mm-hmm. No matter what your situation is, anything could happen. You know, companies are changing all the time rapidly. And I think as long as you have, if you're centered with that, with like knowing who you are as an artist, nobody can take that away from you.
You said something very interesting that when you're in school, and you said that you have to leave the school things behind, the training things behind, and start to express the artist within yourself. And I think about so many times, and I've been through conservatory training, so much of the focus is on what you're not doing right.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. sometimes can zap the energy of what initially brought you to the thing in the first place, that made you want to be a dancer or a singer or an actor or a saxophone player, whatever it may be. And that that's kind of the trap of conservatory training, is that it's everything is wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so your worth or your idea of what you contribute is minimized because you're really trying to fix things that perhaps need mm-hmm. to fix, maybe don't.
Yeah.
Drama school, we had a lot of training on how to speak. I don't know if people want to hear me speak proper English all the time.
Yeah.
You know? Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think there's something about stepping into your full self mm-hmm. where you can say, you know what, my turnout might not be the best, but I have 18 other things that I do really, really well.
Or, you know, whatever it may be. And there's so many things that you could be insecure about. You kind of realize that not as big of a deal as you think it is usually. And I think that's you know, all you can be is really yourself. Don't try to be anything else, because, you know, why would you? And when you're truly yourself anyway, you have no reason to be nervous, or because it is what it is.
Over the past, I can't believe it's been almost 3 years now, but over the past 3 years, we've had so much happen in the world. We've had COVID, George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and so many others. We've had controversies in the political systems that we've been. And now we're seeing global warming have real impacts. And I wonder what you think your role is for your generation, which is the future, in picking up this mantle in the struggle for the expansion of human rights, for having a clean and sustainable environment, and having equity for everybody on the planet.
I think it's difficult because there's these old issues that are now getting to a tipping point. Everything's kind of boiling over. I feel like the most important thing is to just be open and understanding, and try to understand people that aren't like you, or people who haven't been brought up like you. Because I feel like, especially in the United States, politics are so polarizing. And I feel like more and more extremes on both sides, kind of. People feel alienated. And I think that's why they get so defensive. And I think it's important for us in general, in every situation, to kind of remain a bit flexible and understanding, but still stand our ground on certain things. Mm. I hope that that's the direction that we're moving in. I don't know if it is, but.
You've traveled the world, you've lived in different countries. Why do you think, and this is not just, it's happening everywhere. And I wonder your perspective is on, why is it so hard for people to embrace people who are different from them, who have a different set of beliefs from them? Why is it that we start to reduce it to my way is right, your way is wrong, versus being able to really live in the gray middle and really allow to hold two conflicting thoughts? You're engaged, you're about to be married, and people could have feelings about that because they may not believe that two men should be married.
Right.
But why can't we? And maybe I'm asking this in a larger sense of the word, but why can't we live in a space where if someone disagrees with that, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But they're not out slating against you. They're not out trying to prevent you from being married. They're not out condemning you. We have to have that space where we can meet in the middle and be human together.
It's an interesting thing because, especially with the issue of homosexuality, because as a gay man, my initial reaction when somebody, maybe it's because of the generation I come from, my initial reaction of when somebody is, you know, a bit homophobic or doesn't think well of my quote unquote lifestyle, as they like to say, my initial reaction is like, I just don't have time for it. You know what I mean? I don't indulge, and I kind of am not so quick to give them the benefit of the doubt. And I think that's something that in myself is not helpful, because normally people that think this way come from a very different upbringing, different generation. And that's why they maybe don't see the world the way that I see it. So even in the midst of intense ignorance, I think it's still important to maybe try to understand other people's point of views, so that we can, sometimes it's, finding middle ground is hard to say in an issue like this, because I don't want to find middle ground. I want you to just not be homophobic. You know what I mean? I want you to flip to the other side, you know?
Right.
So it's hard to say find the middle ground, but I guess just, you know, finding that ability to allow people to just like be themselves. I don't know. I don't know what the answer to it is, though. I think for me, what I can do personally is just not avoid having difficult conversations with people, and not just kind of like shut people out when I think that they feel a certain type of way about me, or try to be kind and nice to everyone, because maybe I'm the only gay person that they've ever come across. Yeah. And then if I treat them poorly, it's just going to further their idea, their negative stereotype of gay people. But if I could be a positive gay person, maybe it could change their idea of what being gay is. Or even though that's kind of difficult to do, because my initial reaction sometimes is just like, okay, you're, you know, full of crap, go away. But that doesn't actually help the situation. That doesn't actually help anyone.
Something you said that's very interesting is that oftentimes it is hard to have the patience and the love and understanding for a person in the gay issue, for instance, where they're really looking down on not supporting you. It's not about your lifestyle. It's about you. And it's also difficult because oftentimes that comes with, well, if I don't agree with you, I don't think you have a right to exist. Or if I don't agree with you, I think you shouldn't have the same access to the same life, the same choices, the same opportunities that I have. And that's where it becomes hard when you're on the receiving end of that to pause and try to bring evenness to the conversation. And I struggle with it too, because I don't want to be guilty of the same sort of judgment and the same sort of pushback that I'm experiencing for another person. Yeah. That's what's complicated. But I think the answer, and I think you really stepped right onto the point of it, is that it's not about being abrasive or being argumentative. It's how do you deal with that person from a lens of love? Because that's the only way you change someone. You don't change them by argument points.
Absolutely not.
Everyone has talking points. Everyone is armed with all the points or all of the whatever about everything. So if you're going to change someone, it's never going to be through an argument. It's going to be through expressing the humanity that you have.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting because this point in particular with homosexuality and everything, I feel like as I'm writing more and trying to be kind of open and honest about my experience as a person, I find that a lot of the songs that I'm writing are very gay themed or very blatantly homosexual. And I think if there was one thing that I would want to kind of express in my music is just a kind of like, you know, I like the idea of writing simple kind of love songs or whatever from a gay perspective that aren't necessarily gay music, but just gay by default because I'm gay. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I think that's something now that we're finding the middle ground between either something is like not gay at all or like super gay, super gay in the sense of like catering to a specific audience because you know people are going to love it because you meet this criteria, as opposed to just being gay as an afterthought, just because it's natural and just because it's, you know what I mean? And we're not, I feel like, you know, it's like this thing of the pendulum swinging one way and then it has to eventually come back and then like meet in the center. And I think it'll get there eventually. But I guess with my music and stuff, I hope to bring that energy a little bit.
Are you going to keep writing your own music?
Yes. I have a couple songs in the works now. I'm working with some people in Berlin to kind of make the production a bit more professional. It's a slow process just because I'm also dancing and everything. But I am still writing. And
Because you record every track. You're recording your own harmonies. Mm-hmm. Which can't be easy.
You know, it's funny because, so I grew up doing a capoeira, this Brazilian martial arts. And a big part of that is singing. In capoeira, my trainer happened to be, our instructor for our group happened to have a really great voice. And so we would often just kind of sit around and work on songs and we would harmonize with each other. And so I kind of developed an ear for harmony, just kind of naturally. It wasn't like in a class or like learning about the notes. And so I couldn't really tell you what would make a good harmony or whatever, but I can just kind of like feel it. And that was what was keeping me from writing in the first place, was the fact that I wasn't trained and I didn't necessarily like know what to do. But after American Idol, speaking to all of these different kind, amazing singers, like so many amazing singers, and all very different, and they all wrote music. And they were like, yeah, I wrote like 10 songs a day. And they just wrote, and you know, whatever came. So when I came back, I was kind of like, let me just use my own kind of natural intuition to guide me and like not overthink it. And so that's what I started doing. And I would kind of hum something and then, oh, this harmony kind of sounds good. Let me record that. And it's very kind of just playful.
It's interesting that your approach to music has been what comes more naturally and from your own inspiration, which is the exact opposite of how you've approached your dance, which has been so technique-based, so rooted in a very academic, not in the book sense, but in a philosophy sense type of training.
It's funny. It's almost like one started one way and one started the other, and they're kind of meeting in the middle a little bit. Exactly like you said, dancing is very strict training and everything. And now I'm kind of finding the release and the freedom as a professional and still working on that, actually. And with singing, it came from a complete place of just doing it for fun and doing, you know, my own instinct. And now going back and kind of learning a bit of technique or learning what could, you know, help me further whatever, my music and singing and everything. So it's interesting.
It's been such a big year for you. You've had major life events happen within the last 12 months. And I wonder what excites you the most, what you're excited about your life as this amazing journey you're on continues to evolve.
I think after this year in particular, I just feel like just options in my own head. Like I think any kind of insecurity or border that I thought I had in my own head has kind of come down. And that's kind of exciting because I feel like empowered to just kind of take it as far as I could go with it and to really be independent in myself as an artist and as a singer, as a dancer, as whatever, to not judge it and just kind of go with my instinct and see, because it's gotten me to do these great things so far. So why wouldn't I continue to trust it, you know?
Right. This season, we're focusing on people who found their voice.
And okay.
I wonder if you feel over the past year that you have found your voice. And if you have, what do you want to say with this amazing platform that you have and are continuing to build?
In my art, anything that I make, dance, singing, I think the most important thing to me is just honesty. And I think that's something that I would want to pass on to either next generation or instill in other people, is the fact that you can just be honest and yourself in your work, and it's completely valid. And beauty comes in many forms. And I think that's an important thing for people to remember, because you don't have to compare yourself to anybody or anything. And yeah.
Beauty comes in many forms. So true. Skylar, thank you so much for your time today. I know it's later over there in Dresden, Germany.
A little bit.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate you sitting down with me again and making time and sharing your amazing journey over the past year, not just on Idol, but in your life, in your dance, in your music. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's fun.
Please, always. And to those of you who are watching or listening, remember, we all have a voice. So use yours wisely. Bye, everyone. Thank you, Skylar.